Welcome to Office Hours. I'm David Meltzer. We're live here at the Sirius XM Studios in Las Vegas. And I have the celebrity co-host here. It's amazing. Noelle Russell, the originator, the OG from Amazon, creating Alexa. She also is educating a lot of different corporate leaders on how not to be afraid of, but utilize AI today to make humans more human. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And talk about the Golden Boy. Amazing. One of my favorite Los Angeles Rams, but most known today is everybody else from social media, the Golden Bachelor himself, honoring us here in Las Vegas.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Charismatic, intelligent person. Thanks for joining us, Melo.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And our anchor woman, in all her glory, one of my best friends from the movie The Secret, the master of feng shui, as well as a variety of other things, movies, TVs, best-selling author, and blessed to be in your latest movie, which will come out next year. Thank you so much, Marie Diamond. Go to Marie Diamond's app, by the way. It'll change your life. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are blessed to have former FBI hostage negotiator and the author of one of my favorite books, Never Split the Difference, the amazing Chris Voss. Thanks for joining us in the studio.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks
Thank
a lot.
Thank you for your patience. One of the things in your book that was surprising in negotiation was empathy.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And there's a form of kindness and understanding. And I was the CEO of Lee Steinberg Sports and Entertainment, the most notable sports agency in the world, who also wrote a book on negotiation. And it was a much more scarce perspective of negotiation with billionaire team owners than your book that is explaining how to never split the difference in a different perspective. How does empathy play such a critical role in negotiations?
Well, people have a deep-seated need from the caveman days really to be understood. And there's a difference between whether or not I understand you and whether or not I feel you make you feel understood. Now, we didn't know it at the time. We used to trigger incredible changes in people. Terrorists, I mean, you name it, bad guys of all sorts, by making them feel understood, and suddenly they soften up on their stance. Now, that was before neuroscience. Now, with neuroscience, if you feel understood, principally that triggers two neurochemicals in you just because you're human. Doesn't matter how old you are, doesn't matter your gender, your ethnicity, none of that, just because you're human. And it's oxytocin and serotonin, when you feel understood. Now, oxytocin is a bonding drug. Everybody knows that. Sometimes they refer to it as a love drug. So if I make you feel understood, you bond to me. Now, secondarily, oxytocin is also the truth drug. So you're more inclined to tell me the truth. Hence, after intimate physical encounters, pillow talk tends to be very honest because people are bonding, but they feel like telling the truth. Now, the kicker is serotonin, which is the drug of satisfaction. So if I make you feel understood, you're going to bond with me, you're going to be honest with me, and you're going to be less demanding. That puts me in a pretty good position to make a deal with you.
That's pretty incredible.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
Now, I know you're a big fan from Delta Airlines.
Yeah. From the master plan. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I actually have quoted, and of course, I hope I don't get it wrong, but this is how I have represented.
If you get it wrong, to just be aligned with me.
Yeah. But something that I say to the people that I help and mentor in my organization is how important it is to have high stakes conversations in low stakes environments.
Yes.
And I absolutely love that because, you know, I'm in a world where we're building artificial intelligence and I'm helping companies build these AI systems. And I'm very concerned, of course, about the safety and security of these systems. But the most important thing I learned is that we had to start by building. Like, you only learn when you start building. And so I'm curious because at Amazon Alexa, which is where I found, like, I got started.
You're the real Alexa, right?
Yeah, right. The voice of Alexa. Can you tell? Yeah. No.
Sounded familiar.
But one of the
just
things
the mind of Alexa.
In the symphony.
The kind mind.
We had like a group of people building Alexa, and it was a symphony of talent. Lots of different people, lots of different types of people.
Right.
And it was very hard for us to get along because we all thought so very, very differently. And I'm curious, you know, when it comes to, like, you talk about tactical empathy, I'm just curious, about your approach. If you're in a room full of, and now granted, it's not a hostage negotiation situation, but there is definitely negotiation that I had to do. And I'm just curious what you, how you would handle a room full of people that think very, very differently. And you're trying to get them to build something. Well, we really didn't know the outcome of, right? We're building artificial intelligence. And so I'm just curious about your philosophy, like this low stakes, you know, environment, which is, you know, we weren't in production yet. But the high stakes conversation is we were building AI that right. eventually 500 million homes would use. So how might you inspire a group like that to work together?
Well, as soon as you start making them feel heard, they're more willing to listen. So it's a sequence. I need you to listen to me. I'm going to make you feel heard first. And a long time ago in a galaxy far away, last century in New York City, when I was an FBI agent there, I was very involved with this crisis hotline helpline. I ended up being chair of the board. And I can remember when I was on the board, I used to sit in the board meetings and just make people feel heard. If they wanted to make a point, I'd amplify their point and I'd make them feel heard. Now, I wasn't trying to get into a leadership role, but the more heard everybody on the board felt, the more they wanted to collaborate. And then after about a year later, they're like, all right, so we nominate you for chair because the way you're leading us. And I just try to make you guys feel heard. And so, you know, you often mirror someone. Somebody says something, you repeat the last three words of what they said. They feel heard. They're trying to make a point. Soon as they feel their point has been made, now they're going to shut up and listen. And they're going to appreciate that. So I'm sure that you, as you facilitated what people had to say, then the chaos would start to slowly diminish. And instead of all the instruments playing a different song, you had the symphony going, right? They're playing the same song.
I love that. Thank wow. you.
Yeah. Mel, you walked into the fire.
Yeah, well, this is good. Dave introduced me as a Golden Bachelor, but I'm also an attorney.
I didn't even know that.
Is this the first time you found out?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm all over. My team is all over preparing me. No wonder I like. Are you a recovering lawyer or a real lawyer now?
I'm real lawyer.
Oh shit! I'm a recovering lawyer.
Yeah,
I got.
No, I'm in the mix of things.
Oh shit!
But in most of the things that we do, obviously, I represent former athletes with their disabilities, you know, their injuries and things, workers' compensation, disability.
It's tough.
But it's tough, right? It's a good mission. A former NFL player. Played 11 years in the NFL with the Los Angeles Rams, but now I'm representing the players, and we're always engaged in negotiations with, you know, other like-minded attorneys, because you see those attorneys all the time and you always appear in front of the same judges all the time. So my question is, like, for lack of a better term, horse trading. Like, I'm dealing with you on this one today and tomorrow I see you on another case. Right. And so we're having this back and forth. So we're constantly negotiating, and I know you and you know me, but where there's still high stakes with a lot of money involved. So can you address and comment a little bit on that interaction with people that, you know, all the time you're negotiating constantly for years, not like one off. It's like, I'm talking about knowing the person for 10 years, always negotiating.
Right. Right. Well, I think you're constantly bargaining, and bargaining is a subset of negotiation. And then there are times when you got to bargain. Horse trading is bargaining. It's, you know, bartering. It's haggling, however you look at it. More and more attorneys are sort of coming in from the cold. And if I may, I'll call out a specific guy, Jeff Sklar's transactional attorney in Los Angeles, enormously talented guy. He's sitting listening to me give a talk in New York probably 6-8 months ago. They're going to trial on Tuesday, on Monday. This is Thursday. And he thinks, do we got to go to trial? So he calls the attorney up, opposing counsel, and does what we refer to as an accusations audit, which is, here are all the stuff you hate about us. And then you shut up. You don't dismiss any of it. You just lay it out there. They agree to talk over the weekend. They avoid going to trial. They work it out. And what Jeff has said these days, he's, now I love doing this. I'm back to being, I'm a student of my craft. I look forward to talking to the opposing counsel, where we both have this mutual aha moment. And together we discover a better way. If you're bargaining, if you're haggling, you can't discover a better way. You're taking chunks out of each other's side. He goes in now like, all right, so you got a position, I got a position. We're both used to arguing. Lawyers are trained to argue. You get stand up in front of a judge, you make an argument. You put somebody on a witness stand. You corner them with questions to make them look bad and embarrass them. But with each other, if you're looking for a mutual aha moment, then you make better deals. And next time the other guy is not avoiding you, he's looking forward to talking to you. And you talk to the same people over and over again.
Is your idea, though, on the next deal, like, I'm going to cut this deal with him today because in a month, I know I have another one, another deal with him later on. Maybe I'll soften my position or harden my position. Is that also in your mind?
No, that's typical bargaining. Mm-hmm. And a lot of attorneys will do that, which now if you're softening your position now because you're making the next deal, what are you doing to your client?
Well, yeah, you're not supposed to, not
you're negotiating your best interest, not your client's best interest.
Right, exactly. But, you know, there's some of that going on because you're thinking—
A lot of that's going on.
I got 10, you know, cases with this guy.
Yeah.
Right? And this is the one in front of me now, but I know tomorrow I have another one.
Yeah.
I got to deal with the guy again. You don't want to make enemies. You want to be friendly, but you got to be tough for your client.
Well, empathy doesn't mean you give in on anything. I mean, I refer to your job as a negotiator is to be both an irresistible force and an immovable object. How do you make yourself completely immovable on your position? By listening to understand the other guy's position. Because their first thing is, do you understand where I'm coming from? Do you understand what my points are? You start articulating the points out loud to them. First of all, they go like, oh, wow. Wow, they do understand. And then secondarily, there's going to be some compensation for being understood. Now, I want to know what that is. And you got throwaways and you got stuff that you're asking for because you want to give it away. You got all this positioning that you're trying to do because you want to work on the next deal. So you know that going in. You know what? I want to get down to the heart of what you really have to have. And when you find out of what I really have to have, there's a possibility, not every time, but enough times, that we'll discover something new together. Never be so sure of what you want that you wouldn't take something better. Lawyers walk in having being fixed on what they want, which gives you blinders and tunnel vision. You miss what's better in many cases. And I know I'm picking on you, but
it's really good.
That's right. I've faced much worse.
I'm sure you have. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I think the differentiator is this work group ethic that exists with the lawyers and the judges, right? And if you're looking at a decade of experience, although it's high stakes, considering not knowing someone at all. And just to interject before you, Marie, I was just curious where you use the previous years of history in relationships. Are you bringing up mutual successes or mutual bonds from the past as he goes from one week to another with the same judges and attorneys?
If I make you feel heard and respected, it's completely disconnected from the outcome. And that's what you're going to remember. And I always want people to remember that they were heard and respected. I assume that I'm going to deal with them again. And then if we're at an impasse, one of my rules is I never want you to wonder what a great deal would be for me. Like if we didn't get there, didn't come up, I don't want you in a year saying like, oh, if you'd only told me, if you'd mm-hmm. only told me. So I come to impasse all the time. And my last thing is, all right, so I understand why you can't make this deal. I understand why it doesn't work for you. You got your reasons, and I respect all of them. Here's what a great deal would look like with me. Here's what would make me happy to look back on today in 10 years and say, that was the day we started everything. Now, if you can't do this, I have no problem with that. But here's what a great deal would look like for me. And then I lay it out and I give you the option to walk away. I never want there to be any doubt in your mind what a great deal could be. Because you might be able to do it if I'd only told you. Mm-hmm.
So good. Marie.
Yes, so another recovered lawyer myself. But
I didn't even know that. You've been friends for years.
This is like, get a law degree.
I feel like I have to go back.
His lawyer would be so proud of all of you.
Yeah. His lawyer's anonymous. Hi.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm Marie.
I'm Marie. I'm a lawyer.
So, you know, I work with a lot of athletes and celebrities on executive mentoring. And for me, it's always first about listening, right, to what is their present, trying to understand them, for them to help them, you know, get their strategy moving forward. So I love that in your latest book, Never Split the Difference, you talk about mastering the five levels of listening. Could you share kind of like very briefly, how that can help them to uncover their hidden motivations.
Well, the first level that's the hardest to get through is level two. And this is the hijack moment.
Okay.
Don't be a hijacker. Don't be a hostage taker. Now, when people first start to listen and they stop just focusing on their internal dialogue, the first thing they start to listen for is, aha, gotcha. And it's hijacked to correct. You know, I'm listening long enough till I gotcha. I can tell you you're wrong. And I'm going to hijack the conversation. Now, you're going to find that very disruptive. I'm going to find that very satisfying. I love to hijack, love to correct, love to tell you you're wrong. You aren't going to like it at all. Same moment, flip side. Common ground. You say something that triggers me and I want to share.
I don't have anything going on.
That's a hijacking moment also. A lot of other people that teach communication call that story stealing. Oh, listen, let me tell you what happened with me and my son. Holy cow. And I'm at a conference a couple of years ago, and a guy says, what are you teaching today? Bunch of CEOs, Virginia.
Yeah.
Like the problems with hijacking over common ground and how it's almost never there. He says, oh, there's always common ground. He says to me, how'd you get into the FBI? And I start telling a story why I voluntarily listened to a senior agent, and I did what he told me to do, which is really unusual. Most people don't follow advice. But I went to see him because I was being successful, and I followed his advice. He goes, you know what? Same thing happened to my son. So first of all, this is not a first-person story. His common ground, to start off with, it's not his experience. He says, yeah, well, my son, he was a great wrestler, and when he finally got beat wrestling. So now this is a story where his son failed.
Which, makes sense.
Mine was a success story, so now we're off track a little farther. He says, yeah, and then that's when my son finally listened to me about this life lesson. So now it's a story about your son who'd been ignoring you, because you'd been telling him he was wrong. And my story was not with my father, and it was not in a failure. And it was about me actually taking advice because I was open to it from the beginning. What's my point? Most people, when they hear anything that they can relate to, they jump in. Now, they don't mean to hijack. And I had another guy say, you mean to tell me that when I'm sharing my story and I feel that good, they don't feel the same way? I'm like, no. They're thinking to themselves, oh, you had to one-up me.
Uh-huh.
But it's so well-intentioned. That's the most dangerous moment because your heart's in the right place. You're trying so hard to connect. And what they've said has triggered something in you that you just want to share. And they don't realize that's a hijacked moment. So that's level two. Once you start trying to feed back to somebody, so this was important to you because, well, this mattered to you because... And I have trouble resisting a hijack moment because we all want to connect. If you can get past that and just really make it all about them, and then pretty soon, when you make it all about them, then pretty soon they're kind of looking at you with puppy dog eyes.
They do.
Do you circle back and say, after you've given the story, can you circle back and say, I have a similar experience?
I might at some location. I don't need to because what I want is for us to connect. You know, my desire, there may come a point in time when it may come up, but my real desire is to connect with you.
Yeah.
And we do this practice all the time when we're training. And I'll do it with a group. And we'll talk about a passion. A passion's exercise, one of my favorites. And I'll have them talk to everybody in the room, 30 people, talking to one of my trainers, whether it's Troy's talking about training basketball, coaching basketball, or Derek's talking about coaching basketball. Most of my hostage negotiators have done a lot of stuff on the side just to make the world a better place. And I'll have everybody in the room interact with them and get out these amazing stories and really connect from what they've heard. And then I'll say, now, how many of you had to give up your own common ground to get that? Listen to everything that you just heard about Troy and Derek. You didn't say a word, and you just revealed stuff that you had no idea was there. So at some point in time, and I'm going to want to connect back, but I know it's a separate dynamic because I want you to connect with me.
Love it. Thank you.
It's amazing the parallels of negotiation with speaking. And Maya Angelou guided all great speakers of they're not going to remember what you say, but they'll remember how they
felt along. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely, which leads into my favorite tagline to all the shows that I do is what I think Chris Voss represents the most, which to me is so important in every aspect of your life, is to be more interested than interesting.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how being more interested allows you to build this common bond and feeling for successful value communication and knowing what you like, don't like, you don't know what works and what doesn't work, and being able to give people more of what they like, what they know and what works, compared to taking away what they don't like, don't know, or is not working, really allows you to convey true value and feeling. And there's nobody better in the world. If you haven't read Never Split the Difference and his new guide that he wrote the foreword to, Fight Less and Win More, an empathetic approach to value collaboration, the incredible Chris Voss working with companies and governments around the world to create peace in unity. Chris, what an honor. Please promise us you'll come back.
If you guys will have me back, I'd love it.
Amazing.
Absolutely.
We are here with a bunch of lawyers and Chris Voss here on Office Hours.